students to opportunities within and outside the college to promote their academic and professional development. The Black Male and Queens Focus Group is open to all HFC students. For more information, visit our website at hfcc.edu/BMQFG. Again, that website is hfcc.edu/BMQFG.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Hello, good afternoon, and welcome to the WHFR Journal. My name's Alan Mazurek, with you until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Kitty Love comes up and kicks off an afternoon of blues here on WHFR at that time. On our program today, coming up in just a few moments, we will get to meet the people from Freedom House Detroit, courtesy of a presentation that was put together by the Council of World Cultures here at Henry Ford College that took place last week. We'll hear about Freedom House Detroit, which supports and empowers asylum seekers, and he'll learn about the refugee crisis and the level of help needed for a safe journey to a new life. That's coming up in just a couple of moments here on the WHFR Journal. Before that, we have got a lot of stuff to talk about taking place here on the Henry Ford College campus in the next week or so. The race to Thanksgiving and the middle of the fall semester, everything converging at once for a lot of great activities going on campus here in the next few days. We're going to tell you about a few of them. We're going to sort of take things in chronological order and talk first about an event taking place tomorrow evening. The course is 22 Chef's Dinner. It takes place tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the 5101 restaurant, the student center here at Henry Ford College. It is a annual dinner to benefit student scholarships at Henry Ford College, taking place tomorrow at the 5101 restaurant. And nothing brings the organization more joy than developing the next generation of Detroit's great chefs and hospitality professionals. So join us for this very, very special dinner. Let's see. Things start off with a cocktail hour featuring music from the HFC Quartet at 6 o'clock. The course's dinner begins at 7 o'clock, and the menu and more details on tickets available at hfcc.edu. So that's coming up tomorrow. Heading into next week, actually, the nationally ranked Henry Ford Hawks men's basketball team kicks off their 2022-23 season with a home opener game against Terra State Community College. That's going to take place in the gym located in the Athletic Memorial Building, Building H here on the HFC main campus. The tip-off for the 2022-23 season is Wednesday at 9 o'clock, 7:30 p.m. The HFC men's basketball team starting off their season under Coach Chris Shepard. Another event coming up next week here on campus takes place next Friday from 8:30 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon, and that's the Excellence of the Black Woman Conference, which is hosted by the Black Male and Queens Focus Group here on the Henry Ford College campus. The event's going to take place in the Mazzara Administrative Services and Conference Center, Building L here on the campus. This is the second annual of the Excellence of the Black Woman Conference to take place. Last year's was a virtual event. This one's going to be in person, and the keynote speaker is going to be Dr. Pamela Pugh, the Vice President of the Michigan State Board of Education and Executive Vice President of Special Initiative Development of the Chisholm Legacy Project, a resource hub for Black frontline climate justice leadership in Burtonsville, Maryland. That's Dr. Pamela L. Hugh, who will be the keynote speaker next Friday. All day long, the conference takes place at the Mazzara Administrative Services and Conference Center, the Excellence of the Black Woman Conference, the second annual here on Henry Ford College. Oh, more fun and exciting things coming up in the next few weeks here at HFC. One certainly not no more important than the Hawk's Nest Thanks for Giving food drive, which takes place this month here at HFC. The Hawk's Nest is a free food and personal items pantry available to any HFC student registered for at least one credit hour, and this is certainly one of their first one of their big drives to stock the shelves for the winter months. Food items will be accepted here at Henry Ford College Wednesday, November 9th through Wednesday, November 23rd. And drop-off boxes are all around campus, including in Building L, the Administrative Services Building, Building M, which houses the WHFR studios and the 5101 restaurant, the lobby of the Campus Safety Building, Building N, and the Welcome Center there on the north end of the campus all have donation boxes to fill up the pantry for the Hawk's Nest, the food drive, which takes place November 9th to 23rd. And then also, just before Thanksgiving, one more thing we want to tell you about. The 5101 restaurant, once again, we'll talk about them. They have their annual bake sale coming up. You have to pre-order your items by November 19th. Pickup will be November 22nd and 23rd. And for more information on things available, including an assortment of cheesecakes, pies, yes, there's pumpkin pie in there as well. There's pumpkin cheesecake in there as well, now that I mention it. Rolls for dinner, cranberry pumpkin loaf, and lots more. You can order online at hfcc.edu or access them through the 5101 restaurant website to place your orders and pick your baked goods up on November 22nd and November 23rd. And last but certainly not least, we want to talk about an event coming up that it will take place Saturday, November 19th from noon to 3:30. This is going to be a very, very interesting one. HFC sociology instructor and a regular guest on the WHFR Journal, at least several times that I remember, Dr. Calvin Derone Harvell will speak at the Michigan State University Community Conversation, How to Support Michigan's Black Male Students in 2023. That event takes place Saturday, November 19th from noon to 3:30 p.m. at the MSU Detroit Center, 3408 Woodward Avenue in Detroit. The event was created to supply educators and the local community with cutting-edge research-based information to support Michigan's black males as college-ready and career-ready in 2023. And again, for more information on any of these events, we do encourage you to visit our website here at Henry Ford College, always changing. Lots of other events on there as well, so you'll find everything there at hfcc.edu. As mentioned, I'm Alan Mazurek here for the WHFR Journal. In just a few moments, we'll come back and we will meet the folks from Freedom House Detroit, a safe place, coming up next here on the WHFR Journal.
You can't buy a best friend. You can love them, walk them, pet them, and care for them, whether they want you to or not. You can take a picture, or 50. You can fly to the moon, travel the world, or just stay in bed. You can't buy a best friend like that, but you can adopt one. There are millions of pets waiting for a best friend just like you. Help us save them all at bestfriends.org.
I believe that the flying saucers are objects from another planet.
The Navy has no saucer-shaped aircraft or missile.
There's no good reason for keeping this secret for three decades.
The government's been lying about UFOs for 50 years.
What is that? Oh,
okay.
5, 6, 7 light.
You guys ever seen anything like this before?
That's one object.
Whoa!
That's definitely not a plane.
What do you think that was?
I'm David Twitchell. Join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m., when we will separate the facts from the fiction, We Are Not Alone. Only on WHFR.FM. It's 89.3 FM. That's the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. We Are Not Alone.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek with you until 2 o'clock today. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to move on to our main presentation on today's program. And this is an online forum that was held last week on Thursday, the 27th of October, presented by the Council of World Cultures here at Henry Ford College, and a presentation from Freedom House Detroit, a safe place. Freedom House Detroit supports and empowers asylum seekers. Come and learn about the refugee crisis, the level of help needed for a safe journey, and hear from representatives discussing the work at Freedom House Detroit, including its client demographics, the asylum process, and how supporters of that mission, like you, hopefully, can get involved, both either as volunteers or in donations as well. As mentioned, this was a presentation that was given last week, Thursday, here by Henry Henry Ford College. Representatives from Freedom House spoke on their work, and obviously we are more than grateful to be able to bring you this presentation here on today's WHFR Journal. I'll mention right off the bat, if you're interested as you listen and find out more about Freedom House, if you want to look them up online, their website is freedomhousedetroit.org. All right, so let's see, to get things started here, and this is going to take up the bulk of today's program. We do hope that you enjoy this this presentation from the Council of World Cultures. Their mission here at Henry Ford College is to foster global awareness and increased understanding throughout the college and the greater community through the study of world cultures. Molly McCord from the Council of World Cultures is going to bring us into this presentation from Freedom House Detroit, and that includes people we're going to hear from, including Lulu Nestor, Julia Givens, and Teresa Duell as well from Freedom House Detroit. So let's listen to it now. The Freedom House Detroit, a safe place presentation that was given by the Council of World Cultures here at Henry Ford College last week. We bring it to you today on the WHFR Journal.
With a professional background in project management and advocacy, Julia always has been passionate about taking leadership and educating and fighting issues that disproportionately impact marginalized and low-income communities. At Freedom House Detroit, Julia serves as the community engagement coordinator, introducing communities and organizations to Freedom House Detroit through the Freedom Talks program, one-to-one communications, and keeping our community of supporters up to date through social media and email updates. So thank you, Julia, for being here. We do have another representative from Freedom House Detroit, Lulu Nestor. She's the supporter engagement coordinator. Lulu is a nonprofit fundraising professional. She graduated with honors from Michigan State University, where she studied cultural anthropology. Her college research focused on community-implemented ways of reducing violence. She is passionate about supporting peace and justice. She previously worked promoting nonviolence and violence de-escalation skills for a Lansing nonprofit. Today, she is the supporter engagement coordinator at Freedom House Detroit, where she focuses on building partnerships with individuals, organizations, and businesses who support the vital work of Freedom House Detroit. And we also have Teresa, and I think Teresa Duell here is with us as well. She is the Fund Development and Engagement Manager at Freedom House Detroit. For over 20 years, Teresa has worked in the nonprofit administrative field. Early in her career, she rose through the ranks at Wayne Metropolitan Community Action Agency to oversee information management, grants management, and information technology. In 2012, she shifted to contractual work for various government, nonprofit, and media organizations. At the same time, she joined Freedom House Detroit's board of directors. In 2019, she joined the staff of Freedom House Detroit as the agency's first ever on-staff grant writer. Today, she oversees Freedom House's development department. Her portfolio includes administrative support, communications, donor engagement, and grant writing. So those are some of the many, many hats that our representatives from Freedom House Detroit wear, and I am very happy to hand it over to our experts and our speakers today.
Thank you so much, Molly. This is Teresa Duell, and I am going to take most of the oxygen today, and Lulu and Julia are going to do what they do really, really well, which is tell me when I have left something out that is critical. So I'm sure as we break for questions, they'll have additional items to add that I may have missed. So with that, I'm wondering if I can share my screen. Is that possible? Yes. Okay.
Yes, you should be able to share it.
Excellent. Yes. I'm hoping everybody can see that. I'm working from one monitor today, so I cannot see you. As long as you can see the big Freedom House Detroit logo, we're in good shape. So since you gave us those lovely introductions, I'm going to jump right into the presentation. Freedom House Detroit helps people from all over the world gain safety from persecution as well as a path to freedom. We were founded in 1983 to help Salvadorans who were fleeing that country's bloody civil war. And today, Freedom House Detroit helps people from all over the world. Since just 2019, Freedom House has helped clients from West Asia, more commonly referred to as the Middle East, South Asia, South America, Africa, the Caribbean, and North America. Sometime in the last 20 to 25 years, our population shifted from mostly Latinx to mostly African. And so today, most of our clients do come from the regions of West and Central Africa. Again, though, I will stress we have many languages and people from all over the world residing at our house at any one time. The clients who come to us are everyone and anyone you can think of, from government officials to human rights activists to everyday people who decided they would not bow down to the authorities or those who would like to take authority. So often they're just normal people who kind of found themselves in the crosshairs inadvertently, merely because they made a choice that differed from what the government or groups the government couldn't control were telling them needed to happen. Apologies as my phone just went off and I forgot to turn it on mute. And our clients speak many languages. The primary ones spoken at the house are French and Spanish. There's also Arabic, Bangla, Portuguese, and then, of course, many of them speak tribal and regional languages from their home countries. So to help you understand our clients and our work, I'm going to share the story of a client that I'll call Maya. In her home country, Maya was a human rights activist who advocated for democracy. Threatened by her work, the authorities arrested and jailed her 3 times. During these arrests, she was tortured. After each arrest, Maya struggled to return to work, to be fully present for her 6-year-old son, Benoit. And fearful that Benoit might be killed or kidnapped, she pulled him out of school. Maya was afraid to leave her home. She suffered not only from her physical injuries, but also from nightmares in which she would relive her torture. She felt broken, and she knew that she and Benoit had to escape. So what Maya experienced, as most of our clients have, is persecution. While it's not strictly defined by law, persecution has come to be characterized by 3 criteria. Harm inflicted by the government or groups the government cannot or will not control on the basis of one's identity. Harm is generally defined as serious physical harm, coercive medical or psychological treatment, invidious prosecution or disproportionate punishment for a criminal offense, severe discrimination and economic persecution, or severe criminal extortion or robbery. And one's identity is strictly defined as race, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group. Freedom House Detroit's primary criteria for eligibility for its programs is the experience of past persecution or a well-founded fear of future persecution. For nearly all of Freedom House Detroit's clients, persecution involves some form of torture. Because so many of our clients are survivors of torture, Freedom House Detroit is funded by the United Nations Voluntary Fund for Victims of Torture and by the U.S. Office of Refugee Resettlement's Direct Services for Survivors of Torture program. The UN Convention Against Torture defines it as intentionally inflicted severe pain or suffering for a specific purpose, such as to obtain information or a confession, to punish, intimidate, or coerce, or for any reason based on discrimination, and by or at the instigation of or with the consent of acquiescence of the public authority. So Maya's family and friends helped to pay for her and Benoit to escape, bribing authorities and paying for flights and other transportation. Like most clients, Maya and Benoit left quickly and in secret. They could not pack more than 1 bag. It is something to reflect on, to think about what you would take if you had to leave everything you know and not be sure if you could ever return. It's a journey that can take months when our clients do make that final, I don't even want to call it a choice, when they are finally forced to leave their home countries. It's a journey that can take months. Most of our clients leave knowing they may never return to their homes and they may never be reunited with their loved ones. So for Maya and Benoit, after a dangerous journey by car into a neighboring country, they boarded a flight for the U.S. They landed in Charlotte, North Carolina, The acquaintance who was supposed to shelter them temporarily was not at the airport to greet them. And without an international calling plan, Maya had no way to reach out to him. They waited for hours at the airport. Maya scanned the passersby for a trustworthy face, but she had nothing but instinct to go on. Maya had not slept on the long journey, fearful of what lay behind her and in front of her. She had only a small amount of money with her, but of course it was not in U.S. dollars, and Benoit was hungry. She was too scared to think of food. Often survivors arrive in the U.S. without a plan. Planning takes forethought and time. Most survivors do not have those luxuries. Survival is the first and only step, and it's one they continue to take throughout every step, all the way up until they get asylum. Survivors find out about Freedom House Detroit from a grapevine of people in their communities. Others find us online when searching for help. In at least one case, it was a taxi driver who knew that the survivor needed help and drove that person to Freedom House Detroit's door. For Maya and Benoit, they're finally able to take a chance on a stranger who lends their phone. And she's able to reach her acquaintance, whose name is Jean, or who we'll call Jean. And within an hour, she and Benoit are in Jean's home. And now Maya is left to figure out what to do next. She knows Jean can only help her and Benoit for a few weeks at the most. So in the morning, she types asylum and shelter into a web browser. She sees Freedom House Detroit in her search results. Maya asks Jean, whose English is better than hers, to call the number. He happily reports back to her that Freedom House has beds available for her and Benoit, and that they can stay in the same room together. More than that, Freedom House Detroit will provide her with legal help and shelter or transitional housing for up to 2 years. With Jean's help, Maya and Benoit board a bus for Detroit. Freedom House Detroit is Michigan's only transitional housing center and full-service provider for people from around the world who are fleeing persecution or violence and seeking humanitarian protection in the United States. What is humanitarian protection is a great question, which I know it's got to be on some of your minds. So offered by the U.S. government to assist individuals in need of shelter or aid from disasters, oppression, emergency medical issues, and other urgent circumstances, including persecution. There are different categories of protection. One you hear probably have heard a lot about is asylum. Others include resettlement, humanitarian parole, which is another one that's been top of mind for many people lately, given what's happened in Afghanistan and Ukraine, and temporary protected status, a U visa, which is for survivors of crime and domestic violence, and a T visa for those who have survived trafficking. For most clients at Freedom House Detroit, asylum is the most secure path to freedom and independence, and most of the legal work that Freedom House does is channeled toward getting its clients asylum. At Freedom House, Maya and Benoit receive food, clothing, and housing for up to 2 years. And while Benoit returns to school, Maya works with Freedom House's legal representative on her claim, on her asylum claim, and with the social services team on her plan for independence. Over 5,000 people have been saved by Freedom House Detroit since 1983. Although I don't favor that wording, it is important to remember that these people are survivors. And if they're able to make it out, it often means they have the resources to do so. Freedom House Detroit offers a helping hand and a refuge with resources that are critical. We serve about 120 people a year, a little bit more than that on average. Most clients will not receive a grant of humanitarian protection during their residence at Freedom House Detroit. Typically, the process takes years. With a legal representative, though, which is what Freedom House Detroit offers, a person seeking asylum is approximately 2 times more likely to gain asylum than someone who tries to go it alone. The cost of legal representation is in the thousands of dollars. And I should stress that the application itself is all in English. It's 12 pages long with 14 pages of instructions. People seeking asylum cannot work until 6 months to 1 year after their asylum application is submitted. So this makes life without a place like Freedom House Detroit a choice between survival today and a future of possibility. People seeking humanitarian protection are not eligible for benefits like Social Security, or food stamps, or Medicaid. Freedom House Detroit works with a network of community clinics to meet our clients' basic medical needs, including vision and dental. Thanks to the Office of Refugee Resettlement Grant that I mentioned earlier, we are proud to say that we finally will be able to hire mental health professionals who will work solely with our clients on our staff. It's worth reflecting on the words in this quote. It was that's on your screen. This was written to us by a former client. Thank you for changing my life, and I will always remember this house. That is a wide sentiment on behalf of our clients. Community. So for Maya and Benoit arriving at the house, let me give you a little sense of what that looks like. Our clients do a community meal in the evening where clients prepare the meal and serve it for everyone. We're actually hoping to shift at some point to having someone on staff who can do that meal preparation. That's kind of a side story. I'm happy to answer questions on later. Lunch and breakfast are all on their own, but we do provide all of the food they need. We also provide all of the hygiene items, so linens, sheets, towels, cleaning supplies, shampoo, conditioner, lotion, feminine products, diapers if you have kids. Like, everything is covered by Freedom House Detroit. We do that through key partnerships with groups that donate to us in kind, and also through those who just donate cash that we can attribute to those goods. One moment. As I mentioned earlier, oh my goodness, we have several languages at the house. Can anyone hear me? I cannot believe I just lost my voice. Oh, it's coming back. We have several languages spoken at the house. and so we use a lot of interpretation and translation services, as well as multilingual staff to help. Moving on. So Maya will receive medical care for her injuries and begin to learn how to manage her trauma. She'll build an American resume and use public transportation, learn how to use public transportation here in the States. She'll also learn how to speak English, and she'll learn to navigate other major systems, including healthcare, finding housing, and the employment system. And of course, Freedom House staff will be with her every step of the way, developing a case plan and setting goals with her that build on her priorities, her skills, and what she wants to do in the future. At Freedom House Detroit, we offer integrated care, which combines four major program areas: housing and basic needs through Freedom Lives, legal through Freedom Aids, mental and medical health care through Freedom Cares, and employment through Freedom Works. We offer person-centered and trauma-informed care in these areas. Today, Maya and Benoit are speaking fluent English. Benoit is flourishing at school. Maya is working, and they now live in an apartment that they share with a former resident. And just recently, about 3 years after first arriving at Freedom House Detroit, they were granted asylum. And with that, let me read this final quote. I will never forget the steps you have taken to share the joy of my asylum. What a consolation after losing my wife. It is important to remember that our clients often leave behind the ones they love. They cannot make the journey with them. So I leave you on that note. I do have a few more slides, but before I get to them, I wanted to open it up for questions.
Hi, Teresa. I'm Cassandra Fluker, the Director of Student Activities, and I do have a couple of questions, but I want to say that Henry Ford College has been a longtime supporter of the Freedom House through our student clubs, Phi Theta Kappa and Amnesty International. They have held many fundraisers in the name of Freedom House, and I want to send a shout-out to our recent retirees and past club advisors, Laura Yaco and Geraldine Gruno. I want to thank you for joining us.
Yeah, giving you claps on my end. Absolutely. Thank you for giving them a shout out.
Yeah.
Thank you for your call.
I appreciate their support. And my question is, Okay, you said you serve 120 clients per year.
Mm-hmm.
And your organization is the only one in Michigan. Where do you refer others who may seek help from Freedom House?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's not an easy answer. So we do serve about 120 people. We have about between 50 and 60 beds at the shelter. It depends on the family compositions that arrive. So when we cannot serve someone, the only option we have, one is we can refer them to other shelters in the area. Those would be mainstream shelters. It's not an ideal solution, and none of us pretends that it is. Mainstream shelters are good at what they do, and they're critical to the homeless services network. They are not equipped to handle people who don't speak the language, know the culture, have any resources, and are ineligible for mainstream benefits. I mean, that's just the bottom line. But that's all we really can do if someone lands on our doorstep and we don't have a bed for them. The other option we have occasionally is a similar organization in Buffalo, New York called Vive. They are under the umbrella organization of Jericho Road. We think of Vive as our sister organization. They do all the same stuff we do out there in Buffalo and at a larger scale. Having said that, it's important to point out that there are very few organizations nationally that do what we do. So like Vive and Freedom House Detroit, the transitional housing, the legal team, the medical and mental health care access, employment resources, acculturation, large systems learning, like all of that is very rare to find under a single roof. You will find immigration attorneys doing their work, and you will find shelters doing work, but to have it be the long-term full package solution that is offered here at Freedom House Detroit is rare, and there aren't many of us across the country. Does that answer the question?
That does answer the question. And with the 120 clients that you serve, by it taking years to reach asylum, do they actually stay with Freedom House all of those years?
It's a great question. They do not. So our role here at Freedom House Detroit is to get them up and moving. So we are going to get them on their feet. So when you think about the asylum timeline, it's a 365-day clock. So from the moment an asylum seeker enters the country, and you can think of this across most of the protections, from the moment they enter, they have 365 days to apply for asylum. Within that time, remember, they cannot work. So our job is really to give them a place that they can leverage the time. So not only work on their legal case, but also there's a waiting period after they submit their application of 6 months to 1 year before they can apply for work authorization. So we're talking about roughly an 18 to 24 month period of time. So how we see our role here is leveraging the wait. So getting that legal application solid and submitted, and learning English, learning how to navigate public transportation, getting healthcare needs met, beginning to acculturate, learning, you know, how do I enroll my kids in school? Where do I find a doctor? How do I read a lease agreement? And where should I even be looking for housing? The housing conversations come later in their time with us. Prior to that, it's going to be work. How do I apply for work here in this country? What does your version of a resume look like? What are the cultural things I should know? In some countries, you know, looking people in the eye is a good thing. In other countries, it's not. In some countries, it's acceptable to show up late. In other countries, it's not. In some countries, and this is a big one here, we communicate by email a ton. But in other countries, it doesn't work like that. So a lot of that is like the day-to-day learning experiences that our clients are going through. So we're really looking to leverage the wait time until they can get a job and save money so that they can eventually move out on their own into a stable housing situation. Like, our goal is always stable housing. But no, we do not shelter them. We do not provide housing for them for the entire wait period to asylum. That would not be feasible for us, and it wouldn't be great for them either. Asylum waits can take a very long time.
Okay. Thank you, Teresa. Are there any other questions before Teresa continues with the power slide?
I have a question. Teresa, for donations, where can we donate products and where can we make cash donations?
Yeah, I'm going to throw up a slide here and in just another minute that I'll have that for you.
Thank you.
I will take some of the burden off Julia, who's here today. We don't accept anything used. It's rare that we would. Sometimes appliances are an exception. But we also have an Amazon charity list, and that tells you all the in-kind stuff you can buy for us that we need. And so we really encourage people to use that. And yeah, I've got some links in a coming up slide that'll get you that information. Thank you for asking the question. Uh-huh. I appreciate it.
Hi, Teresa. I had a question as well. So I have some students that were interested in joining today, but they had another class and they asked if I could ask this question on their behalf. Are there opportunities for students or student-led groups or clubs to volunteer, or it's best just to purchase the items that are in need?
Yeah. So I'm going to be honest, we are working on how to incorporate volunteering that is structured and safe for the volunteers and for our clients. And so right now we are trying out a few new things that I don't think we're quite ready to talk about publicly. But anyone who's interested in volunteering should certainly step up. They can email us at volunteer@freedomhousedetroit.org. And I think that, I take it back, that email address is not at the end of my presentation, but volunteer@freedomhousedetroit.org. And they can just pitch their idea. Sometimes it's great and it dovetails well with work that we need to get done. And sometimes we do have to turn people down. But I think over the next 2 years, we'll really be fleshing out what this all looks like for us, and we'll have more proactive opportunities. But in the meantime, we have received some great ideas from people that have really made a difference here at the house. So I think if they're interested, even if they don't have an idea in mind, they should email us at volunteer@freedomhousedetroit.org and just kind of see. We can always explore that. And that's actually one of Julia's huge responsibilities, is to field those inquiries and kind of figure out if they're a good fit for us. So
yeah, thank you very much.
Sure. Julia, do you want to say anything about that? Is there anything I missed there?
Yeah. So, can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
So we are definitely working on ways to engage our volunteers. But for the most up-to-date information on that, I would definitely recommend following us on social media. So any volunteer opportunities that are public, go on social media, and we'll definitely try to reach out to groups who are interested first. But that's a great way to engage with us as well. And I hope those are at the end. If not, I can pull those social media tags up.
Thank
That's
you.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
Teresa, can I add one more thing to that?
Yeah.
Okay, I can tell you guys can hear me good. Hi, this is the first time I'm talking. So hi, everyone. I am Lulu. Another great thing that groups and organizations have been doing for us is doing fundraisers in their communities, you know, reaching out to people they know, businesses they know. That makes a tremendous help on the amount of services we can provide and just the life of our residents. So that's also something I always encourage with students groups, is consider doing a fundraiser at your school. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and I will just add to that, I have to say the fundraising, sometimes groups get worried they're not going to raise a lot or whatever, they're not well connected. That is hardly, there are two primary points for us to that kind of fundraising. One is, of course, any dollar in the door is a dollar in the door, and it makes a huge difference. The other is that when you start telling people about Freedom House Detroit, our circle of supporters widens. And it is important that we get that word out. And the, you know, we can't do a Freedom Talk to everyone all the time. So when supporters really leverage that fundraiser to talk about Freedom House, talk about the work, they share their support of the organization. It's a personal endorsement of us, and people support based on those personal endorsements. And I'm sure you know from your own lives that you're more likely to support something if you have a friend who also supports it because it's a personal endorsement and you trust that person. So we do rely on that sort of network building, and we do appreciate it very much. Any other questions?
And students, if you are part of an organization and want to hold a fundraiser in the name of Freedom House, please stop by the Office of Student Activities for planning and scheduling.
Ah, awesome.
We are here to help.
Love it. All right. Well, with that, I'm going to jump into my last few slides here. There isn't a whole lot. I think I'm still sharing. Yep. So, and this kind of gets to the questions that were just received, but share your curiosity and commitment. All of our social media platforms are Freedom House Detroit. So you can search us up on Facebook and LinkedIn. The only exception is Twitter. So if you're a Twitter user, that's slightly different handle. It's Freedom House DET, Freedom House Debt. But we do encourage you to look at our feeds and share the content on your own channels. That is an undervalued sort of network builder that we wish more of our supporters would take advantage of. Again, it's that network building, and there's absolutely no cost to you to do it. So if you see something that you like, put it on your own. Losing all my words around this. Share it for sure, and say why you support Freedom House Detroit. That's always really helpful. Tell your friends about this talk. If you like what you heard today, except for the coughing, tell your friends about this talk. We do these regularly. So it's always a good way to get the word out into your community. And you can also, of course, I think, not only talk about this talk, but check with your organizations and see if they would want to do one. And if you are ready to take the next step, which is truly joining this community called Freedom House Detroit, you can give at the short link posted there, bit.ly/freedomhouse/FHD-give. There are a variety of ways to give, from in-kind to cash. Recurring donations mean a ton. So that again, bit.ly/FHD-join will give you some other options other than a straight donation page. And then, of course, we talked about the volunteering. So if you go to bit.ly/FHD-goals, you'll go to our website page where our current volunteer opportunities are posted. We have a heavy need for interpreters for our house meetings, which happen every 2 weeks. Julia will correct me, but it's usually Spanish, French, Portuguese that we are in need of at this point. So I just encourage you to think about taking that next step. If you like what you heard today, if you're still not quite feet in the water on us, then definitely check out our social media. There's great stuff that Julia is posting there, and that will help you get to know us even better. And again, that's an easy, low to no investment way if you go ahead and share what you're seeing. And I do want to read this final quote from one of our residents, our former residents, who left this in a note for us. Better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. Thank you so much for being more than family to me. And with that, I will turn it over for any remaining questions. And again, if you have any questions that aren't getting answered here today, you could always email us at info@freedomhousedetroit.org. Our website is also there if you'd like to review it. The language on the website is a little bit out of date. We really talk more in terms of humanitarian protection so that people keep an open mind and understand there's lots of different protections offered, including asylum. But the address there is freedomhousedetroit.org. And, of course, our mainline phone number is 964-4320.
Are there more questions? Teresa, I believe I heard this, that most of the clients come from Africa.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a particular country they come from?
No, but mostly West and Central Africa. So if you picture the continent, kind of the big bulge on the west side. That's considered West Africa, and many of our clients come from there. And then down below that, sort of the country is also on the west side, more in the, I don't know what that lower part is called. They just call the top part of bulge. Most come from there. So it's Central and West Africa.
Okay.
And it's probably worth expounding on that question a little bit. Our clients find out about us through their own internal networks sometimes. And sometimes even clients currently at the house will tell their friends, like, hey, this is a place for you. Now, we can't help anyone who isn't already in the United States, but the word spreads, or people who are in the process of escaping will find out about us through those networks and those grapevines. And so basically it's kind of, you know, it's who you know. And so because our clients kind of do a lot of that, that sort of word of mouth stuff, that is how we end up getting a lot of the clients from the same regions. I will say, as we have shifted our marketing, because there was unfortunately, it was an unfortunate thing because some of our service partner providers thought we only served asylum seekers or thought we only served people from Africa, neither of which is true. So as we have worked to market differently, we are finding ourselves part of more national networks. They're aware of the work we do, aware of the fact that we're a global organization. And so we are seeing more clients from different places.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
One of my former students was a Freedom House resident. What is the process? How long does it take before they can do something like that? And the student had said something about having to prove that it was a dangerous situation for him, and many of the residents have a lot of difficulty proving that. How do they go about doing that?
Right. So you're asking about the legal case, like how long does the legal case take and how do they prove that they're actually being persecuted? Is that, do I have that question right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm really glad you asked that question, because I feel like if you read the headlines, you would get kind of an impression that it's just that there's no process and that it's pretty easy, but it is not. So the asylum for application, as I mentioned, is 12 pages long. The evidentiary burden is significant. So when our legal representative goes to work on a case, he's working with the client to gather evidence. That evidence can be anything from birth records, marriage certificates, academic credentials, arrest records, because remember, most of our clients were tortured, and so they were arrested by authorities. arrest records, proof of membership in certain groups, newspaper clippings from back home. The other types of evidence are forensic. So not for every client, but sometimes we do have to have our clients undergo a forensic medical exam. And that exam is exactly what it sounds like. It is a physical examination that corroborates what the client is saying happened to them. There's also mental health affidavits as well. So they're seen by a therapist who, you know, based on, I've never been in those interviews, so I don't actually know what they look like. But again, it's a professional certification that, yes, I've interviewed this person. And what they're telling me corroborates with the story that they're providing you. By the time the application is complete, for those of you who remember phone books, it looks like a phone book. It's hundreds of pages long, copies of documents. And that is the proof. So for an affirmative asylum case, and there is a difference between, but, you know, to be honest, kind of doesn't matter whether you're talking affirmative, defensive, or you're talking some other protection, all of it culminates, all of it kind of starts with an application, and it culminates with what I would call the final exam, which is you have to then speak your story. You have to provide testimony on your behalf. And it is quite scary for clients. It is a point where we see more trauma in the house when they're getting ready for that final interview or that final court date, because they are very fearful that if they get one detail wrong, it could leave the impression that they lied about the whole thing. And that is a very scary thing, especially because so many clients try to block this stuff out, as you might imagine, if you experienced the things that they've experienced. So it's difficult, and it does take years. And part of the reason it takes years is because there's a backlog. There's no doubt about that. There's a lot of people waiting who are seeking asylum, and they're waiting. So yeah, I mean, that's the best answer I can offer. And there's no guarantees. If they are denied, they can appeal that decision, but, it's a long waiting game, and you're kind of in limbo until you get a final decision. Does that answer the question? Do you have other questions around that?
One came up from what happens to them if they're denied?
Yeah, so they can appeal. To the best of my knowledge, they can appeal that decision. And that would presumably be another long waiting period. I don't have any examples of a client who has been returned. I have to say, we vet our cases pretty carefully. But typically my understanding is if you are denied on your first go around, then you can appeal it.
Teresa, I just have a question regarding the process in the United States versus other nations. Do you know how the asylum process compares to other countries around the world? If it's a thing in other countries, if it's comparable, and I just wondered if you have any information about that.
So I have a little. It's probably well outside my wheelhouse, but I'll give you what I know, and then I'll tell you what I don't know. So yes, asylum is a thing across the world too. It's the UN that sort of enshrined this whole thing, and the US signed it into its own laws. And I'm not going to remember the year, but there is U.S. law now that covers asylum. So it's a totally legal thing to show up in another country and say, I'm afraid to go home. Please protect me. Like, that's legal. So I just want to make sure that's very clear, because oftentimes when this stuff is talked about, it's talked about as illegal immigrants or illegal crossing or just any number of things. It's far more nuanced than people realize. It is not a black and white situation. People are fleeing for their lives, and I think it's underestimated what that actually looks like, and what brings a person to do such a thing. So just to be clear, seeking asylum is an entirely legal thing on a global scale, and it's enshrined within U.S. law. So yes, asylum exists in other countries. The only one I'm remotely familiar with other than the United States is Canada. And my understanding is that in Canada, the process is much simpler. And it's, let's say, more generous. My understanding is that in Canada, when you're seeking asylum, you're immediately or almost immediately eligible for benefits and to work. So that's a very different, like, that alone makes it significantly different from what you're dealing with here in the U.S. when you come. And you're basically going to have to sit on your hands for 6 months to a year and a half before you can work. Actually, I should say probably more like 8 months to a year and a half before you can work. Beyond that, I don't know. I don't know if if in other countries beyond, the U.S. and Canada, how difficult it is to get asylum. And it is kind of important to think about just how the globe is set up. When you think about how many countries in Europe are sitting right next to each other, it's just a whole other, you can remember the wave of Syrian refugees that came, and how, Greece was, kind of like the Texas of Europe, right? Like, you had all these people coming in, and everybody was like, why aren't you helping all of these people? Why aren't you, we're supposed to be the European Union. And so we're seeing a lot of that now in the United States, of course, as we're seeing the situation at the border kind of get more concerning. So anyway, I hope that answers. It's the best I've got for you. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of information on how it works in other countries.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Once this person has been granted asylum, what's their route to citizenship after asylum?
That's a great question. So there are timelines marking out this holding. So they get asylum. I believe then from asylum, they have 1 year to petition to have their family, to be reunited with their family if they choose to do that. I believe they have to wait 2 years. Boy, you're really testing me now. I'm going to have to get these timelines down. I believe it's 2 years before they can apply for permanent residency, or they have to apply within 2 years for permanent residency. If they want it. And then citizenship, I understand, is a much longer road, partly, I think, because of the expense, but I actually don't know for sure. I will say, I think in my short time at the agency, both as a volunteer and as a staff member, I've maybe heard of one or two clients getting citizenship. It's important to kind of think about a few things as you process what it looks like for clients after they leave Freedom House Detroit. They're starting over. So no matter what they came from, and some came from very high level jobs in their countries, others did not. But either way, when they get here, they're all kind of starting from scratch. Most of their educational credentials and professional credentials won't transfer. So they are literally starting over. Most of them will spend many years working multiple jobs. They're going to scrape together the money they need to reunify with their family, because that alone is a huge, it's a huge boon to mental health. They've done studies on that. Reunifying with family makes a significant difference in the life of a person seeking asylum and a refugee. So, bringing their family here is probably the first thing they're worried about. Permanent residency, I think, and I haven't interviewed anybody on this, so I can't say for sure, but I do think that's a likely target for most of them. It's just greater security and stability. And beyond that, citizenship may be kind of far off, again, because of just trying to make it, just trying to earn a living, support your family, build wealth, make sure your kids have futures. Like, that's what it looks like. One day maybe being able to move out and actually be in a house of your own or an apartment of your own. Many of our residents, partly for the community aspect of it and partly because it's just financially the only way it's feasible, they'll move in with each other into the same sort of apartment complexes so they can pool their funds and save more, basically. So citizenship is kind of far off for most of them.
Hey, the Council of World Cultures is proud to have offered this presentation to the campus community. I want to thank Molly McCord for bringing it all together. It was very informative. And I thank our Freedom House representatives, Teresa, Julie, and Lulu. You provided us with great information. And I want to thank our retirees once again for joining us and for their support over the years. So thank you so much for coming.
Thanks to all of you for having us. Thank you, Julia, for helping coordinate all of this. Geraldine, really great to see you online. You're a huge supporter, and we can't thank you enough for all the years of care and support you give here. Thanks for having us. Anyway, it's been great.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Have a great day.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that presentation from Henry Ford College's Council of World Cultures, and a conversation, a discussion, a presentation by Freedom House Detroit. This event took place, this virtual event took place last week, Thursday, October 27th, and was sponsored, as mentioned, by the Council of World Cultures here at Henry Ford College. We do appreciate both them and the fine folks from Freedom House Detroit for allowing us to bring you that presentation today. For more information on the organization, visit freedomhousedetroit.org, and that includes information about many of the things talked about during the conversation and the discussion today, including volunteering, donations, things like that. For more information on the Council of World Cultures here at Henry Ford College, simply go to hfcc.edu and in the search bar put in Council of World Cultures, and you'll be able to find out much more information. And we really do thank them for allowing us to bring you that today here on the WHFR Journal. That's just about all we've got time for today. We hope you have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us this Friday afternoon. We've got blues for your Friday afternoon coming up in just a moment. Kitty Love and Highway 61 from 2 to 4 this afternoon. After that, it's going to be the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Show from 4 until 6. And then, of course, once the sun goes down, 6 to 8, Space Is The Place. Tom Wilson will be your host this evening here on WHFR Making Waves. Don't forget, I think it's what, Sunday morning. Don't forget, turn those clocks back when you go to bed Saturday night, and that way we'll know we can see you back here at 1 o'clock next Friday afternoon for another edition of the WHFR Journal. At 89.3 and online at WHFR.fm, this is WHFR Dearborn, public radio from the campus of Henry Ford College here in Dearborn, Michigan. Making Waves. Have a great week.
Hi, this is Tom Wilson. For a great mix of avant-garde and experimental music, please tune in to the Space Is The Place program every Friday from 6 until 8 p.m. right here on your favorite radio station, 89.3 WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. Memphis, Tennessee.